This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
The worldwide leader in MMA joins the worldwide leader in sports. GSP and Diaz no longer a thing. We'll talk about who GSP wants and what could be next for him. Kamaru Usman gets the win over Demian Maia in the same way that his previous two opponents have. And let's stop putting him with high-level wrestlers. How about that? Joe, nice to see you.
Yeah.
We got a nice show because we got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, there's lots. Yeah. I'm pretty excited. Good fights. There's not much excitement from that last card for me, though, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, there was nothing really that stood out as... The problem is when you're fighting Demian Maia...
Yeah.
You can't dominate Demian Maia.
Yeah.
And you can't look great against Demian Maia. Nobody's really looked great against Demian Maia. Except for maybe Nate Marquardt, who knocked him out. But aside from Nate Marquardt,
yeah, seriously.
It's hard to look good against Demian Maia.
Yeah, and that being the main event, it kind of left that taste in my mouth of not a great card. But I think overall, when we break it down, we'll see that there were some good things that happened from the card. But I was just hoping to see Kamaru Usman come out with that little bit more of flash because, again, they're talking about him being the next big contender. So I wanted to see a better performance to end the night off, but we didn't get that.
I'm rudely going on my phone because I wanted to pull up a poll that I conducted on Twitter. And you can follow me on Twitter at Aaron Bronstetter. You can follow Joe at Bazooka Joe V.
Yep.
We never plug our Twitter. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you already follow us, and that was just a
moot
point. Who looked the most impressive against Demian Maia? So we've got. I'm going to see what your vote is before I give you the results. Tyron Woodley, Colby Covington, or Kamaru Usman.
Who looked
of the three? Who looked the best, in your opinion, against Demian Maia?
Repeat again.
Tyron Woodley, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman.
Who looked the most impressive?
Yeah.
That's a tough question. I'm trying to think how the fight with Tyron went.
It was a while ago. It was last July, almost a year ago.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, it's hard. It's a trick question. Yeah, I mean, no one really looks great. I know that's where you're getting out of it, but who looked the best?
Yeah, of those three guys, who looked the most impressive? So do you want me to
Go
you
with it. Let me see what the poll results.
Okay, so Colby Covington, 43%. Tyron Woodley, 39%. Kamaru Usman, 18%.
Yeah, I was leaning towards the Colby Covington, to be honest with you. At least there was some exchanges. Colby got hit a few times from Maia, so that's when everybody was all questioning how good, you know, Colby Covington's stand-up was. So, yeah, that's probably the right. Your poll was probably accurate.
I don't know if it is, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because I think if you were to ask what the most exciting fight of the three was, Covington by a mile.
Yeah, that's like, what that kind of way I was looking
sure
at it. Yeah,
that was the most exciting one. There were good exchanges on the feet, as you mentioned. But who looked the most dominant? I think it has to be Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't let Maia grab a hold of him at all. He didn't let Maia hit him at all, and he separated his shoulder in the first round and still managed to look as good as he did against Demian Maia. Now, if you look at the Usman fight, I think Usman's not getting enough credit because the fight just wasn't that exciting, but Usman completely neutralized him.
Yeah,
he completely neutralized him. The thing is, he looked hittable early on, and that made me think, what if it was Ponzinibbio instead of Maia? How would that fight have looked?
Yeah.
That's a fight I'd like to see
different
happen.
Strategies, obviously.
Of course.
He would have to approach it differently. Yeah, and you're not really worried at that point with Maia striking.
Right, if you get hit, you get hit.
Yeah.
You walk through it.
But
with Ponzinibbio, it's like,
yeah, you're going out. You're going to sleep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. That fight is awkward, but there's been a lot of talk about why Demian Maia wasn't pulling guard a lot more. I mean,
and I agree with that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk on what's Demian Maia doing with this many years of experience, like pull your guard
but not hard enough, not when he had a grip of him.
Yeah. Do you think we're seeing the best of we've seen the best of Demian Maia?
Yeah, but that being said, it's easy to say when you see, like, here's the wrestling credentials of the last three people he fought. Kamaru Usman was a national champion in Division II. Colby Covington, multiple time All-American. Tyron Woodley, multiple time All-American. Like, these are the highest of the high level wrestlers in the welterweight division.
Yeah, but with a jiu-jitsu background,
aside from Ben Askren.
I mean, it's just wrestlers are doing so dominant. And everyone asks me, what art do I think is the best for MMA? It's got
to
be wrestling.
It has to be.
I mean, even these jiu-jitsu guys on their back, wrestlers are just so good on top position that they know how to defend the submission now. But I think when we first started watching MMA, it was always ground to people. So you can see the evolution of the ground game and of the martial arts too now, because people are starting to be aware that the ground isn't just the ground. There's a difference between wrestling and jiu-jitsu, which, I mean, I think the audience is now getting more intelligent with fighting, which is good as well.
I think it'll always continue to grow intelligently. And that's, I guess, one of Robin Black's biggest concerns with the way that the sport's covered. And he mentioned this on the Joe Rogan podcast this week. Shout out to Robin, who gave me a shout out. I know that this show has a bit of a bigger platform than Joe Rogan's show, so I mean, yeah. he does owe me one now. But
I was waiting for Joe and Aaron. No, I didn't get a drop. Come on.
They were talking about the sports angle and how they don't like when sports talk creeps into MMA, how they talk about it as like, this guy's going to win this fight, and here's my pretty hot takes. They like the purity of the sport.
Yeah.
And I think you can say that for a lot of other sports. Like, I think you could say you could look at basketball strictly from an X's and O's purity perspective. It's really just not kind of what sells in the scope of entertainment. But at the same time, you look at that particular fight and what you said, the people getting more intelligent. Robin's argument is, if you're watching a Chile fight night, like, you must be educated on the sport.
And not to dumb it down for... Yeah. What's your take on that? Because I'm always torn, because I am the color commentator for kickboxing. So what happens now, I'm always thrown in a situation where I when I'm on air, I feel that whoever's listening to me has listened to all of my stories, the build-up. So if I repeat the same thing, being like, oh, this is an orthodox versus a southpaw fighter, this is called north-south fighting. But again, if I keep repeating that, am I, you know, just being that boring commentator now? So I'm always playing around with, do I have to, I don't want to say dumb it down, but simplify what I'm seeing, or do I keep it more advanced talk as a martial artist?
I think you need to do both.
Yeah, and I agree.
Hear me out. I think if you say this is a north-south fight because it's an orthodox striker versus a southpaw, now what? So what does that mean? What does that mean for the southpaw? What does that mean for the orthodox fighter?
But I mean, you say it a million times, though. Like, I can spend 5 minutes explaining, you know, the power hands is the most dominant. The orthodox fighter is going to try to use his right kick, his right hand to set up the power of the south. So, I mean,
how is that fighter done against southpaws? How is that fighter done against orthodox? You know, is this a weakness? Is this a strength? This guy's, you know, typically done really well against, you know. I think those kind of things, those little nuances, people appreciate because you've explained it to them, you've explained why it's important, and you've explained...
And then you bring it to more advanced application.
Yeah, you bring it to more advanced application, and you also look at it on a case-by-case basis with the fighters. But, you know, Robin's kind of argument is when you look at the desk now, and that could completely change with this ESPN deal, which we'll get to in a moment, but you shouldn't dumb it down for your audience, because if your audience is watching the post-fight show, they're probably really invested, and they've already watched the fights. Explain why this happened, how it happened. You know, Robin's done now, I think, is 300 of those mini breakdowns he's already done, because he's just a beast with them. But those, you learn more from those than you do on the broadcast.
Yeah.
And he's whipping them up and putting them together.
The question is, too, what always comes back to is, who is the audience now? Who are we appealing to? Are we appealing to, you know, the same people? Like, hardcore fans are going to watch regardless, right? But now, say someone for the first time watching, and they're like, a lot of people watch football, and they'd have no idea what's going on, and it's overwhelming for them.
Almost everybody.
Yeah, and it's overwhelming for them, so you throw away a lot of people, but the passionate fans are going to watch regardless. So if we could make MMA that way, right? I understand where Rogan does a good job at having that balance, I feel, where he's able to entertain the beginner, and they're able to entertain the advanced person watching as well.
Well, I don't think Robin's gripes are with the broad, like the play-by-play. I think his gripes are more with the analysis after the fact or the previews. Because here's the thing. The way that Robin breaks it down is very scientific. And
Absolutely.
If you went to school and you learned science and you learned about angles and you learned about math, and I was never any good at math and science, but I can appreciate what Robin's doing in that regard, because you're like, oh, okay, the back foot and why that matters and where the power is coming from. Like, that stuff's interesting to anybody.
I think so, too.
So I think that by dumbing it down, you're almost taking your audience for granted. But, we could go into this.
Well, that's where even if we're talking on air, but that's where your play-by-play commentator is. He's saying the obvious. He's asking the color guy questions that he doesn't even know, because the play-by-play guy is not an analyst. He just watches it, and he's calling what he sees. And it's our job as the color to kind of break it down that way.
Yeah.
So.
And the problem with MMA and calling MMA versus calling other sports is that there's no stoppage at all in the action. You can't show replays during the round.
So,
you're watching 5 straight minutes, or in the case of kickboxing, 3 straight minutes, where it's not like, okay, we're going to show a little window here, and this is what had just happened. You can't take your focus off of it, whereas in basketball, you've got possessions.
Yeah, you have the time
in
to
hockey,
slowly.
you know, puck goes over the glass or it's a TV stoppage. Hockey is actually a better example of something closer to MMA because there's so much action going on. But there's just very little stoppages. Football, there's a stoppage after every play.
Yeah, and they have
the play
time.
Is like 10 seconds and they have to fill time in between. Baseball, every pitch, there's a break.
Yeah.
You know, so when you look at the mainstream sports, MMA is very different in that regard because you've got to call 5 straight minutes of action.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think with working with Todd Grisham has totally changed my mind on how I view fighting sometimes. Because we're here to promote the sport, build it as much as we can. And Todd Grisham is, you know, WWE background, ESPN background, UFC he called. But his WWE side, I feel, comes into the sport sometimes. And Glory being a newer combat sport that we're trying to build up, he kind of got me away from being so much X and O's, you know? I could talk about he's got to do this perfectly, that. He's got, you know, he's got to step this way, step that way, circle that way, but that's not really the story. We want to get the person watching excited about this fight. We want to hear about, you know, he coming back and his family story, and he's, you know, trained. He just got knocked out. His father just got sick, so he's fighting. So, I mean, creating the story, I think, is how we generate that, the massive attention.
One of my favorite things about watching you and Todd on the broadcast is when you're like, you're talking about this guy was, you know, in Thailand, he was training for this, this is, and then a guy just gets knocked out.
Yeah.
And Todd's like,
and then he just freaks out. Yeah,
he cuts you off and just screams to the
that's
microphone.
That's the job, though. That's the best part.
And you're always so composed afterwards. Yeah. Like, he goes crazy, and then you get right into like explaining how that happened.
Boom.
And I love it. I think it's a great balance. But, and I think the UFC could do a better job of doing that, of finding that balance. And they still do it. Like, it's, but they mix up the announce teams a lot. Like,
yeah,
I think
it's tough.
If you listen to Fitzgerald and Felder together, they've got a great chemistry.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're good.
And then if you listen to Anik and he does it with Felder, like, it's a good chemistry, but I think Fitzgerald and Felder have a bit more comfort with each other.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, and
it's buddies calling fights at the end of the day. If you can create that friendship with your, you know, your broadcast partner, it's the best.
Like, you need consistency. Like, you need to, I think they almost need to make set teams. But I think we're going a little bit off track
that's
here.
Good.
But at the same time, With Usman, now what? I mean, I don't think he's in title contention yet. The question is, who does he fight next? And I think if you take the loser of this co-main event for UFC 225 between Covington and RDA, that would be a good matchup. Another thing to consider is, well, I mean, I think the Cyborg's going to be one of the coaches for the Ultimate Fighter, and where the Ultimate Fighter goes from here, this might be the last season coming up, the one they're doing heavyweights and featherweights at the end of the year, women's featherweights at the end of the year.
Okay.
But, and I think Cyborg's going to be one of the coaches, but seeing Covington and Usman as coaches would have been something
pretty
cool.
Yeah, it could be cool.
But that said, Covington could very easily beat RDA. It's pretty much an even money fight.
Yeah, it must be, because I heard Robbie Lawler isn't really not in the picture right now.
He's not in the picture, and they train together.
Yeah, Lawler, Thompson and Till being, you know, fighting.
But Usman Thompson would be great, and Usman Till would be great. I mean, that's another thing. He could fight the winner of this this weekend.
Yeah, if Usman needs a good striker, you know, I think that's when we can really see him utilize his good takedown defense.
Yeah.
But again, it could
him
be a boring
Thompson
fight again.
No, I don't know about that.
I mean, Thompson, it could be a hesitant fight again because Usman wants to shoot
like
in.
Woodley Thompson.
Yeah, he wants to shoot in. To shoot in on Wonderboy Thompson is almost impossible. You know, you have to
so
eat a shot,
distance.
There's so much distance control in that fight. So I think it could be another stalemated fight.
Yeah, Till versus Thompson is going to be so much fun this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the fights I've looked forward to for such a long time because the Darren Till machine just keeps getting bigger and bigger without him having to do much.
Yeah, well, he's talking. He's talking quite a bit.
But I mentioned he's only been on television once.
Yeah, but it's
in
his confidence, you know?
Yeah.
That's what he's spewing all this confidence that eventually it rubs off on you. And you're like, in the beginning, like, no, number 8 ranked. He's only beat Cerrone, whose chin is a little suspect. But then all of a sudden, like, you're believing it. You know, he's kind of got that little bit of Conor McGregor in him that can kind of, like, draw you into wanting to see him.
You'll hear from Darren Till later on the show as well as Stephen Thompson. I should have plugged that off the top. Those
there
are two pretty solid guests.
That's huge
to get on a show. But Darren Till, the interview with Darren Till, I've already conducted it. I don't like pretending that it's a live interview. I mean, you're not there for it.
That's right.
Everybody knows, whatever.
That's
the interview's been done at a different time. I've already done the interview with Darren Till, if you're listening to this now, obviously. And I love speaking with him. He's just such an interesting guy and such an engaging person. And just such a different approach to how he promotes himself.
Yeah, he makes it fun. Like, he's there, but how was the swearing for you? Did he control it? Or?
No, God, no.
No.
It's going to be a beep fest. It's just a sneak preview there. But he said something that was very Joe V in his. Do you have Fight Pass, right?
Yeah.
Watch the in depth with him. It's an hour long. Like a mini documentary. But he's got a very Joe Valtellini mentality about becoming a champion. He says, like, being a champion is plan A and there's no plan B.
That's
right. And the other thing he said is, you know, if they wanted me to fight Francis Ngannou,
tomorrow,
I would do it.
That's
he's like,
right.
He's like, I might get completely clobbered, but my mentality is,
I'm going to try. Yeah.
And that's like, you know, that's the thing about
it. But not only are we
going
to try, in our heads, we're going to win. Yeah. So that's the key for us, right?
Well, the difference between Darren Till is like, he's got a kind of an interesting mentality of like, I could win, I could lose. He doesn't exactly make it so that he knows he's going to win, which is the interesting thing about it.
But in his mind, he knows he's confident.
He knows that there's the potential of him losing. That's the kind of the interesting thing about it.
Yeah, there always is that potential. You wake up sometimes and one day you're waking up and you're like, oh, I'm going to knock this guy out. The next morning you wake up and you're like, ah, I don't know. I'm not feeling great today. I'm a little fatigued. I'm tired. Oh, my God. I'm going to get knocked out. Mm-hmm. So you always play that mind. That's the mind struggle. That's what makes fighting so difficult.
But I think that him being at peace with the idea of losing is interesting, too. Because he's like, I could be completely embarrassed. I could end up on my back. But that's he knows that it's a reality of the situation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure deep inside he thinks he's going to win. But he also – I like that he has kind of the – that's kind of the thing about Darren Till that I think – is going to really resonate with people is just his honesty, his unabashed honesty. And he knows that he needs to talk to self-fights, but it seems like he talks more about himself than his opponent, which I think is interesting. His mentality.
A good martial artist only focuses on themselves. Yeah. Like, you'll ask a lot of fighters, and I mean, the more interviews you do, you can even ask them. If you ask, how much tape did you watch on your opponent? A lot of fighters don't watch a thing.
Yeah, Cerrone said that about Till, actually, before he fought Darren Till.
I never watched any of my opponents. Mm-hmm. The first thing you do is you glance. I'll glance at a fight, and I'll be like, okay, he's southpaw orthodox right away. He's an aggressive puncher. Maybe likes to throw his left kick. That's all I need to know. I don't need to know anything else because I'm going to fight my fight. I'm going to force him into my game.
But before Cerrone fought Till, I interviewed him in Edmonton last year. And I said, you're going to be fighting Darren Till. He just had a big win. And he was like, I've never heard of the guy. And I go, okay, are you going to watch any tape on him? And he goes, no, I'm not going to watch any tape.
Yeah.
And I was like,
people think it's crazy.
I was like, well, but like, how are you going to know? And then after the interview ended, he pulls me aside. He goes, hey, he goes, I'm really not going to watch any tape on the guy.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And like for him to do that, in my mind, I was like, okay, that's
like,
interesting.
I can't speak for anyone else, but the reason why I didn't watch it is because I got nervous. Like I'm fighting, for example, I was fighting Murat Dereci, who had, 10 times the amount of fights I had in his homeland of Turkey. I could watch him online, and I turn on a highlight tape of seeing him knock everybody out. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see him knocking his opponents out. I don't want, because I'm scared.
That could be you.
I'm scared, I'm terrified. I'm nervous, I'm confident, but damn, I'm nervous. I don't want to go and get knocked out. So why am I going to watch him doing well? So I just quickly watch one fight, and that's it.
Well, you can watch Joe's commentary on ESPN, and I'm just going to use that as a segue to the UFC signing a deal with ESPN. When the deal came out with them getting the digital package, for them getting $150 million for the digital package, I was like, wow, that's a lot of money for just the digital package. Little did I know it was a precursor to ESPN announcing that they've got the full deal. And I have to say that I think this has to do with two factors played into why ESPN started to aggressively pursue the UFC. Number one, well, actually, there's probably three. Number one is Top Rank. Top Rank boxing has done really well for them with the different fights with Lomachenko. Whenever they've had Top Rank on TV, which I'm sure pains Dana White to think about because it's Bob Arum's baby,
his company.
And he hates Bob Arum, but Top Rank's ratings among a younger demographic, which typically boxing has a way older demographic, the younger demographic have gravitated towards Top Rank.
Yeah.
They think they can do the same thing with the UFC and bring in a whole new demographic, bring in a younger wave of fighters. And that's why they're making it both a digital play and a television play. I'm getting scared of being in television right now because they're starting to call it terrestrial television.
Okay.
And as soon as they started calling radio terrestrial and satellite radio, terrestrial radio just started to Howard Stern started to demonize it. I'm like, oh my God, am I in like an old aging platform? But at the same time, we're also doing digital. I mean, this show's both digital and it's terrestrial. It's on radio and it's on digital. But I found that interesting that they called it the terrestrial package. But I digress. I think that having it on ESPN is going to be a way for them to lure a younger demographic. The UFC's demographic is younger than a lot of other sports.
And is it going on, like, I don't know anything about their UFC
deal.
Let me talk
you through it then.
Now, My it's under this ESPN Plus, right?
It's under both.
Okay.
So this new second deal that they announced is
okay. This
the
is
TV
where I don't
deal.
Know.
It's basically the Fox deal that they've had.
Okay,
with,
and it'll be on ESPN One.
It's going to be on. They haven't determined which ESPN.
One or two,
probably ESPN One or two.
Yeah.
They've announced that they're going to have, I think it's 10 strictly UFC Fight Pass cards that are going to be on ESPN. I think it's going to be 20 on ESPN Plus, plus 12. Pay-per-view prelim cards are going
to
be on
and
ESPN.
And I hope that helps Glory out, to be honest, because either it's going to spark the ESPN crowd to love combat sports,
right.
So that helps Glory, especially being live events. But my other question to you is, what happens, everyone's complaining about UFC Fight Pass now being non-existent almost.
Well, this is the thing about UFC. From what I understand with Fight Pass, at least in North America, or in the U.S., rather, if you subscribe to ESPN Plus, for an additional $5, you get Fight Pass. Now, why is that?
Because they'll probably still put some things on. Or...
Well, it's interesting because Fight Pass is $9.99 a month.
Yeah.
So rather than paying $9.99 a month for Fight Pass, you're paying $9.99 a month now for Fight Pass and ESPN Plus.
But now in Canada, we don't get options.
Canada,
ESPN?
Everything is up in the air. We don't know what's going
unless
on.
Unless you use a VPN. I don't even know if that's legal. Or I don't even know if I should be saying that.
You
I don't
probably
know how
shouldn't,
that works.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
But all of that's up in the air, and it will be determined.
Because it would be terrible
all
for us
ESPN,
not to be able to watch
no,
these.
You'll be able to.
Maybe
in
TSN.
In all the global markets, you'll be able to. I'm certain
that
the UFC
to
is
going like to
open those cards up. Because when you think about a lot of the other cards that they have now that are on television in certain countries but not in other countries, they always make it available somehow. Like, they're not going to make it so that their product is exclusively only seen in one country. It just wouldn't make any sense. So I'm confident that the ESPN Plus fight cards that are digital in the U.S. could be either on TV in other countries, could be on digital platforms in other countries, could be on Fight Pass in other countries. Who knows?
And they can't make ESPN like that international, the app? Or is it just...
They just don't have the rights to show it in certain countries.
Okay.
You mentioned the VPN. I think that it'll be locked to America. Like, I think if you, in Canada, if your phone is in Canada, it'll detect that and be like, this is not available in your territory.
Yeah.
So, that's how that's going to work. But in terms of it being on ESPN, it's very significant because of the fact that they can really push it on SportsCenter, they can push it on all of the different shows.
And you think it's
going to
be
have.
A lot better than Fox?
Absolutely.
With the rating-wise, would ESPN have better viewership?
Yes, absolutely. Way better viewership, way better lead-ins, way better promotional
the ability
machine.
To promote throughout
the
weeks and days. Because that was Glory's big thing with ESPN as well, is that we weren't getting the time, like... All of a sudden, the show came on, but it wasn't on SportsCenter, people talking about it. It didn't pop up on events saying, hey, next week it's going to be on so-and-so.
I think that was the big factor.
It's marketing created within the platform, which is nice.
I think that was a big factor for why they chose ESPN. And I think Fox might have even offered them more and they went with ESPN, just because they looked at it and was like, okay, in order to be in the mainstream, we need to be on ESPN. In order to be like a mainstream sport attraction. Because not enough people watch Fox Sports 1 outside of the UFC content.
Absolutely.
Like, people aren't tuning into their other programming.
And the if you're watching ESPN, you're a sports fan, and most likely you're going to be attracted to the UFC.
And people will talk about it. They'll be able to really boost the product. So number two, another determining factor is Jimmy Pitaro taking over as president of ESPN. Jimmy Pitaro used to be with Yahoo. He had a pretty... You know, when he was with Yahoo, they went really strong on combat sports, and it did well for them. When John Skipper left ESPN and he took over the role, a lot of people speculate that he was really, like, this is kind of the first big thing that he's bringing to ESPN, if I'm not mistaken, since taking over as president. Like, he's really going, like, hard on combat sports because he saw what Top Rank was doing. And then number three, I think, is you're just taking away tons of inventory from your competitor. Because Fox Sports 1 now is going to be pretty naked. Like, the UFC accounted for a lot of their programming inventory.
Hmm.
So now what? Now what does Fox Sports 1 have? I mean, they just signed a deal with PBA Bowling, but I'm sure the ratings for that are not going to be what the UFC is. They have some baseball. They have some of the college football package, but they've got some soccer. But it's kind of now they've kind of taken away a lot of Fox Sports' identity.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they try. Like, Bellator stuck with Paramount, which I think it's crazy.
Them.
Yeah.
And Fox has SmackDown now. They got the SmackDown package from WWE and paid a lot of money for it, but that's going to be on Fox proper, not Fox Sports 1.
Yeah.
Then maybe they'll play replays on Fox Sports 1. So I don't know. Where Fox Sports goes, where Fox Sports 1 goes from here is anyone's guess.
Hmm. Interesting.
And their talk shows are not doing well in terms of the ratings. So, I mean, I don't want to turn this into a slagging Fox situation, but I think that's part of the reason why they're going to ESPN, is because they see that Fox Sports 1, a channel that was built almost for to host UFC content is just not doing well. And another interesting factor is that the UFC is still going to be in charge of production for the shows. Like, they're going to produce it themselves rather than have ESPN.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, which makes sense because they know the product better than.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Else. So there's that. I think that for the sport and for people that love the UFC and love mixed martial arts, this is a huge, huge step in the right direction.
Now, over the last few years, my understanding, there's been a decrease in overall viewership with UFC. So.
But it's also television as a whole.
Yeah,
it's not just the UFC. So that's one thing to consider as well. It's just that a lot of people are cutting the cord. And that's why I think ESPN Plus is such a big part of this, because it's a big digital play for them.
Yeah, and even hearing a lot of guys now, they want to fight on the prelim cards because the pay-per-views aren't getting the numbers anymore, which is super interesting hearing Overeem, right?
Yeah, exactly. On the card, they announced that Overeem versus Blades was going to be on the prelims rather than the main card. And all these people on Twitter
freaking
are outraged.
Yeah.
I tweeted out, I said, I don't know why people are so consider this an insult. It's more eyeballs and same money.
Yeah, like what's the average pay per view now? What's an average pay per view getting?
About 300,000.
And probably the main event.
Million.
You're almost four times the amount.
Yeah, so you're gonna have more eyeballs on you. It's better for your brand. It's better for
if you're
marketing,
not getting pay per view points.
Yeah,
doesn't
people
matter.
People are messaging
right?
me like, "How do you know Overeem's not getting pay per view points?" Like, guys outside of the main event
don't
typically do not get pay per view
so
points. And pay per view points don't matter unless you're selling over 250,000.
What about now
anyways,
with CM Punk? Because CM Punk got moved to
the
main card.
Well, he was always on the main card. The thing that got moved to the main card was Holly Holm and Megan Anderson.
But why? The question is, why would they put CM Punk on the main card? Is he getting pay per view points? You think?
No. I don't know.
Because it's kind of like,
I don't know. He's getting big money. I think he's probably getting $750 for the fight, but I think that the reason you put him on pay-per-view is to draw fans, like draw from another pool of
to try
to get people to watch. It wasn't really super successful for them last time, if I remember the buys for the Cleveland card that he was on the first time around. But I think people were intrigued.
Yeah, I'm interested in it. I'm still don't understand why people are freaking out with the CM Punk thing. I still don't understand. I still think it's okay to have people who aren't as good. You know, fight.
Goldberg almost fought for glory.
Just because, UFC is the highest organization, but it's okay to have other fights that as long as people are evenly matched and there's attention to it, it's okay. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know why people are freaking out about it, but I think as a fighter now, being on the top five cards is just a prestige kind of thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm on the main card. So it feels good. And I don't think we really look at the viewership all the time.
Behind it, yeah.
But as a fighter, you want to be on the main card. It's just the terminology of it, right? To say you're on the prelims compared to I'm on the main card, it's just more prestige.
Is it fair to say that some fighters, I think it's because of the nature of the sport, are kind of insecure? Because you don't know
maybe
what your future, like you don't know what your financial future is. You don't know what, you don't. I think a lot of the fighters don't really know what's best for them in terms of a business sense. Is that fair to say? I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking out
depends.
Of school.
No, it all depends. Some people have no idea. Like, and a lot of fighters, I mean, I guess UFC is a little bit bigger, but seeing the up and coming of the sport, it's not, they don't know what to do with money. They don't know how to invest it. They don't know how to do their taxes. They need people to do it. But if you're not making money, like, that's why a lot of fighters get into these holes. Or they get all this money and they don't know how to spend it and use the camp. But, not really very business savvy. A lot of the fighters.
Like, to me, if the UFC called me and said, we've got two options for you here. You can be the third fight on the main card of the pay-per-view, UFC 228, let's say, and whatever, throw any number. Or you can headline this card in Argentina. Headline the card in Argentina. If it's going to be on TV, you've got your name on all the posters. You've got your face on all the posters.
I agree.
The event's called whatever, Fight Night, so-and-so
with your name
so-and-so,
on it.
With your name on it. From a branding perspective, you're going to have more eyeballs because you're in the main event. Main event is when the metrics are usually the highest for television. Take that instead of being on a pay-per-view. Even though pay-per-views are supposed to be bigger.
Yeah, not necessarily. Like, depends what's bigger. You know, bigger maybe as in the arena, there might be an extra 5,000 people in the arena. But based on TV is where you want to be popular.
Yeah. And just name value, marketing. All of that is important. So the final word on this ESPN deal is I just think that for the growth of the sport,
it's
nothing
positive.
Can be better
than
this.
It's good to hear from you.
It's very positive. And the
good
one thing that I found was strange is that they're still going to continue with the 12 pay-per-view model, like 12 pay-per-views a year.
I thought they were changing that.
No. Apparently not. It seems like 12. They're saying that some of the pay-per-views will be the prelims will be on ESPN, but you know, now that I think about it, they haven't announced how they're going to do the pay-per-views. Maybe they do $9.99 pay-per-views on Fight Pass.
Yeah. When is this change happening?
January 2019. So there's still a lot.
Okay.
There's still a lot of questions. Because
they're still
be
investing a lot in this in the Fight Pass prelims. Because I think we have Rashad Evans going to be on one.
Benavidez
is on another one.
The same one.
They moved Holly Holm, but I think she was originally on a Fight Pass.
She was going to be on the main prelims. The Telematch prelims.
But, yeah. I thought she was on the prelim, but I think there's some other big names that if we go into, you'll be shocked to see who's on the Fight Pass prelim.
But Fight Pass, making Fight Pass good will be good for ESPN Plus also, because a lot of people are going to do that double dip.
The double dip,
yeah,
for sure.
ESPN Plus and Fight Pass.
Yeah, because I guess they want those viewers, right? The UFC did such a good job at building their Fight Pass, making it exclusive and doing well. Like, I still have it because when I study all my Glory stuff, all the Glory events are there, and I can watch some of the events. A lot of the local kickboxing events are there, so I can watch. So I'll probably still keep it onto it.
I think what they really should do, this is just my unsolicited opinion, do 6 of the pay-per-views on a digital platform. Be it Fight Pass. I mean, you can buy pay-per-views on Amazon, Fight Pass.
Even YouTube
ESPN
now.
Plus,
even YouTube Red.
So if you make it digital exclusive and make it $19.99 on those platforms, that'll probably make more money. You'll probably get more buys than if you did it the old-fashioned way.
What about something like the WWE has done with their WWE Network?
Yeah, where you include the pay-per-views.
Is that something you think a future in the UFC would do to have their own kind of channel?
I just don't think it's financially feasible. Like, I think that if they would have made that part of the TV package and made it a really expensive TV package, it would have made sense. Like, let's say they would have gotten, instead of the $300 million they're getting from ESPN, they got $500, $600 million and said, we're going to just put numbered events on your network.
Yeah.
Now, suddenly, it's like, okay, well, this is big, because they'd be getting paid more per event.
Yeah.
Like, a lot more per event. But I don't know. I think I'm worried they might stick with the old model, but who knows? I don't think there's been clarity on that yet, and I'm trying to find clarity on that, but we'll find out. On to the next topic, George St. Pierre on Rogan. I mean, what an interview. The thing I noticed about this, I was going to actually tweet this out, and I haven't yet, but George St. Pierre is like a low-key, amazing trash talker.
Yeah.
So basically, without doing it in a trash-talking fashion, he said the following things. He said, Nate Diaz is too easy of a fight for me.
Yeah.
I don't want to take the fight with Nate Diaz because it's not challenging enough and people are going to call me out on that.
Yeah, it's like a confident trash talker.
Yeah. And then making fun of the of Diaz saying that he was poisoned before the fight.
I loved it.
I was so scared of Diaz. I had to poison him. I had to work with the commission.
I put cement in my gloves.
I put cement in my gloves and aliens came and put gamma in me to make me like the Hulk.
I liked it. I liked to see that side of George.
Yeah, it was... Like, George is, like, quietly one of the better trash talkers, even though he talks about how he doesn't like trash talkers, but because he says it with a confidence where it's like...
No, I loved hearing it. Like, I'm halfway through, and I'm really enjoying it so far, because the more you see George open up as the interview goes on, he starts off, because I still think he's not overly confident with his accent and that stuff, so it ends up, like, as he's getting more confident with Rogan, it's getting better. He's opening up, he's joking, he's having fun, so, I mean, I'm excited to listen to that second half.
Well, that's why I like the fact that TSN did the Mind of GSP. We did like a 30-minute feature on him, because I've always said George in short form interviews, like, you know, 10-minute, 5-minute interviews, is not good.
No,
not even not great. He's just,
you need to warm him
just
up.
Plain bad.
Yeah.
In long form interviews, I've heard him with Chael Sonnen. I've
really
heard him now with Rogan. He's always fantastic.
Yeah.
And when we were able to get to put together a third, like we shot hours and hours and hours of footage to put together that 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's stuff that we have that is like it's awesome.
Oh yeah. Once you even let him talk about his martial arts and training, that's where you're gonna see him, because it's his most comfortable topic, right?
Absolutely.
If you get me to stand on a mic and talk about politics, I'm gonna suck. But all of a sudden you put me out in front of the same amount of people and say, hey, Joe, talk about kickboxing. I'm gonna go off. I'm gonna be comfortable. I'm gonna be confident. So I guess it depends the topic too. And especially when you force George to talk trash, it's not so much, but it's coming out naturally, like when he's comfortable.
Yeah, in that setting, that's always where he's at his best and always where he says the best stuff. So it does look like this Diaz fight is dead in the water.
Yeah, he stopped it right away. Yeah,
well, he's saying he wants to fight either Khabib or Conor, or the winner of that fight.
But it's just crazy that the UFC is apparently promoting that him and Diaz is almost there.
Not really. Dana said that they were working on it, that he's like, yeah, we're discussing it, discussing it. And I think they were discussing it.
Yeah.
But George says he went back to his team and that they, just decided it wasn't.
Yeah, he still wanted to get his ulcerative colitis all figured out, and he wants to make sure it's out.
But it seems like 155 next for him.
Yeah, he looked super lean, and he was talking about how he couldn't even keep the weight on at 185. And so, yeah, even welterweight, looking at him now, like he says he's walking around, what, 190?
Yeah, he said. I think he said 185.
185. That's not a welterweight anymore.
Yeah,
you're now a lightweight.
Well, Michael Chiesa walks around at 191.
Yeah, I mean, if a welterweight now, like when I fought as a welterweight, I walked around 195. Sometimes at the end, when I was my biggest 200 pounds, you have to cut down now, especially with MMA.
When Ferguson and Khabib fell through the first time with the weigh-in incident with Khabib, I saw Chiesa. I think it was in Vegas. And I went up to him and I said, just out of curiosity, would you be interested in taking the fight with Ferguson? And he looked at me and he goes, I'm certainly interested, but I weigh 192 pounds right now.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And I'm like, do you mind if I share that? And he's like, no, go ahead.
Sure.
But and that's why Michael Johnson wanted to take the fight, because Michael Johnson doesn't walk around very big, and that's why he's fighting at featherweight now.
But GSP made an important point, I think, and he's talking about his dieting with intermittent fasting and stuff, which, again, is crazy because I'm doing the exact same thing.
Because he didn't really go into what intermittent fasting means and how he says he doesn't eat anything really until like later in the day.
Yeah, so it's basically similar to what I'm doing. It's time-restricted eating. So he's eating everything normally that he usually does. I'm going more keto-based, fat-based dieting. But he said in the interview he's doing whatever he wants. So whatever you do, if you want to eat your three meals, you eat it within a time frame. So a lot of people, the classic easiest way that people do is 10 hours of eating, 14 hours of fasting. Of no eating. And in your fasting, you can only have water and you can have like black coffee and stuff, green teas, but you can't have any like cream, sugars, because that's going to spike your insulin and then you're going to take you out of your fast. So what you do is you only eat for the 10-hour period and then you fast for the 14. But you can play with it. What it does is it helps you. When you're not eating, it lets your cells regenerate. It allows you to burn off excess things you're holding. We overeat as humans. Like, we wake up, the first thing we do is stuff our face, and then we go to a job where we just sit there and do nothing, and then, hey, it's lunchtime, let's eat again. So we haven't really burnt off any of our blood sugar and all that. Our insulin is spiked, and we don't really need that energy, but we keep force feeding ourselves. So it's just eating within those periods and letting your body naturally burn through the things, regenerate for cells. Apparently it's good for aging. And what it does too, when you're in a fasted period, and once you've burned through all your glycogen and your thing, it's going to start pulling fat. It's going to start wanting to use fat as a fuel source now, because you're not continually stuffing your face with sugar and carbohydrates. So at that point now, you're starting to burn fat. And he even said, and I even noticed with myself, my body weight's staying the same, but I'm leaner and I'm just as strong. So his point was, like, even as a welterweight for him, he's going to be fighting with more water on his body. He's going to have more intramuscular fat, where he says that's not functional weight. It's just weight like wearing a backpack on you. So if you can stay lean, not overbloat yourself, use this intermittent fasting style of approach, he's like, you can really be your real weight in the ring and perform more optimally.
It's funny. It's the complete opposite of what he did when he was bulking up to fight Bisping.
Yeah.
He's just eating more than he needed to.
And he just felt slow, he said. And he didn't look that great in that fight. Yeah. We can say he did well, but he didn't look great. It was not the great GSP we
saw some new tools that I'm sure he'd been working on for the last 4 years, but you're right. He started to slow down also.
Absolutely.
As the fight went on. Yeah. And he said he was thinking of almost pulling out of that fight because of
couldn't eat.
Yeah, because he couldn't eat and he wasn't putting the weight back on and all this other stuff, and he had the colitis. So, yeah, GSP's an interesting guy, man. You know, when you think about champions, there's a certain element of almost like an intellectual side of these champions that I think you need to kind of have in order to become a champion, where it's almost like 70% physical and 30% like intellectual. And GSP to me is not like an incredibly physical specimen naturally. Like John Jones to me is like a natural specimen. His wingspan is crazy.
Yeah.
He's like very lean. He can lift stuff. He can do more than he can do more than his body should allow him to do just naturally. Whereas I think that when you look at the Tyron Woodleys of the world and you look at GSP, and you look at yourself when you were a champion and you were working to be a champion, there's a certain thought process that goes into it. It's like, okay, I shouldn't do too much. This is how I can perform at my best. Let's try some things and see how my body reacts to it. There's just a certain element of intellectual knowledge that you try to gain. Even Connor, especially. Connor is a very introspective guy who subscribes to The Secret and learns about dieting and does like all the stuff with Ido Portal and movement and things
it's
like
very
that.
Very important. They're always trying to find that little bit of an edge.
Yeah.
But the key to all these champions that you're talking about, it's fighting isn't, like I was saying, we're martial artists first, fighter second. I think that's very important. I train more, I'm stronger, I'm faster, I'm better technically than I was fighting. So everyone's like, well, why? Because you don't, if you're not a martial artist, you'll never understand why I do it. Everyone's like, why are you doing this? Why don't you just go eat now? You can eat. Why don't you let yourself go? Why don't you? No, that's not me. I want to there's so many things in my martial arts that I need to improve on. So I want to continue to do it. So a lot of this, the martial artists will fight, take their week off, and then you're back learning. You're learning. Like, I knew I wasn't, my kicking was better than my boxing. I'm boxing more than ever. I didn't have southpaw, so I'm learning my southpaw. So outside of camp, you really need to focus on the learning component. Camp is only about getting into shape, getting your weight down. You have to be learning every single day. And all of these champions have, probably since we've been 4 years old, every single day have been learning every week. So, I mean, that's the key. You got to keep learning. There's no thing as camp. A camp isn't a camp. A camp is just a change of intensity. It means we're going to slow down the learning. That's all it is to me. We're going to slow down learning and just making sure you're ready to perform.
And George is incredibly nomadic. And when I say that, what I mean is he goes and does gymnastics. He goes and does swimming.
Yeah, and he's never stopped it in the 4 years he was off. He never stopped. He wanted to continue to improve those things.
Yeah, he does BJJ. That's why he can do it. He does his Muay Thai. Like, he's just always all over the
place. He wants to be a better black belt, you know. He probably wants to get his black belt in, you know, multiple degree black belt in, you know, jiu-jitsu. He wants to continue to improve his striking. He's still working with Freddie Roach to improve his boxing because his boxing needs still a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So he knows that it does.
But he's
so
also,
he's doing it.
You mentioned being a mixed martial artist. Like, not only he's a mixed martial artist, he's like an athlete. He's a fine-tuned athlete.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like
he lifts.
Yeah,
he does it all.
He does everything. He's almost like an
you
Olympian.
Need it. You need it. You need to have both. And I mean, we talked to Costa last week, mm-hmm. and he's very big on the athlete approach. I mean, I look at it in Anthony Joshua, the boxer. When he fought Klitschko, Klitschko was probably a better boxer than him, technically more experienced. But what made Anthony Joshua so great in that fight is he's an amazing athlete. If you watch his training, he's in the weight room. He's doing all of the stuff, the strength and conditioning that's going to make him so successful. He's a better athlete than anyone he usually fights, and that's why he can dominate so well. Yes, he's good, but you add, you know, great performance training and strength work and deadlifting and squatting and getting your hips firing and your glute training, and like, it's all put together, and that's what GSP has done years before anyone else.
And how George is very smart also in terms of picking his spots. Like, I think he is so patient in the fact that he's like, I'll fight the winner of Khabib and Conor, and that just makes so much sense from a time perspective. Like,
because he's learning
be
still.
Perfect, but
because he's
think
still
of how
learning.
Big of a
he's
super
not
fight
stopping.
It would be
he's
in,
still
like,
training.
If in 2019, a 38-year-old George St. Pierre cuts down to lightweight for the first time to fight a Khabib or a Conor
and wins, and he probably will.
He will be,
and he probably will.
Who knows?
And he probably
against
will.
Khabib. I think he might have some issues.
Yeah, but he's good long with his jab, good distance. I mean,
Who knows?
That would, that's the one I
want to
see. Yeah, let's
see
it.
I'd love to watch both of them. Yeah. Honestly, I think it would be amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, we'll go to someone who trained with GSP, who's a friend of GSP's, and that's Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. He is in the main event of UFC Liverpool this Sunday. Don't forget, it's Sunday, against Darren Till, and he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.
I'm joined now by the pound-for-pound nicest guy in the UFC, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who's going into hostile territory and may be forced to be the heel. But I'm not convinced people are going to boo Stephen Thompson because I think everybody knows that his heart is always in the right place. How are you, Stephen?
Doing great, man. Glad to be on the show with you, man.
It's going to be a different feeling for you, I'd imagine. I mean, I'm not convinced that people are going to boo you. I think they might cheer louder for Darren, but they know that you're a good guy at heart. Do you think that that's possible?
You know what? That could be possible. You know, I've been here since Sunday, and everybody here in Liverpool has been super welcoming and just really nice. I mean, I know hopefully, you know, if they do want to boo me, they'll get it out, you know, the day before. They have a huge football game they got going on. Soccer game they got going on, and there's supposed to be a million people in the streets, so hopefully they'll get all that cheering, and they'll have hoarse voices by the time Sunday comes around. But yeah, man, everybody's been great, to be honest with you. I know I'm in enemy territory, but the booze and stuff, if they do that, you know, it's it doesn't bother me one bit.
That Scouser accent is a little tough to pin down, though. Somebody could have yelled something, you know, crazy at you, and you could have been just like, "Thanks, man." And do you think that's happened, or has anybody said anything strange to you so far?
No, absolutely nothing. You know, I was downstairs earlier, had some fans that are from Liverpool wanting to get some autographs and get some pictures taken. And I'm telling you, man, ever since I've been walking the streets daily, and everybody's been awesome. Everybody's been great, you know. Of course, you know, they're going to be cheering for Darren Till, but hey, you know, it is what it is. It's your hometown guy, and I knew that going into enemy territory, and it's not the first time I've been in enemy territory anyway, but I do believe this is probably the most, I wouldn't say hostile, but I would say they're more passionate about their fighters and the fight game than anywhere else I've been, but I'm prepared for it.
So this is a pretty interesting situation for you. I mean, again, I don't know if they're going to boo you because you haven't really said much negative about Liverpool or Darren Till. So I'm going to give you an open floor. Anything bad? You know, is the tap water at the hotel taste bad or anything about Liverpool you want to say that, you know, I know you're not Colby Covington. You're not going to go that far. But is there anything about Liverpool you'd change?
You know what? Since we stepped off the plane, and it's crazy because everybody's told us this here, that it's been sunny, you know, all day. And they say that's very, very rare. So since we've been here, man, it's been awesome. There's nothing bad to say about Liverpool. I actually like it. Want to come back. I'm glad I'm here. That's one of the reasons why I was so interested in taking this fight was because I've never been to Liverpool. So I'm just glad to be here, man, to be honest with you.
I mean, do you like the Beatles? Or anything bad to say about them? Or
We're going to go to the I think they have like a shrine for them, man. It's like a little Beatles museum. We're going to check that out after the fight. We're going to stay a few days after the fight just to kind of get some sightseeing in and visit the country. So it's going to be cool.
Someone could say you were like a Rolling Stones guy or something, but let's move on. Let's move on from anything negative. Let's go to something very positive, which was announced today, the ESPN deal. UFC and ESPN partner up for a five-year deal with many fights going to ESPN+, many fights going to ESPN television. You're American. You grew up. You know how big ESPN is. What are your thoughts on this deal?
You know what? I literally, right before you called, was on Instagram. I'm pretty much going everything off of Instagram, off of Wi-Fi here. I don't have service. So I just found out that they had posted up. It said UFC or ESPN, the new home of the UFC. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, ESPN's huge. I mean, I remember growing up and some of the best fight cards ever was on ESPN. So I think that's cool, man.
Yeah, so I imagine you grew up watching ESPN because you were into sports, and you mentioned combat sports, and ESPN had combat sports there. What do you think it means for the growth of the sport?
I think it's a step up, to be honest with you. I really do. I mean, whenever I think about, a real professional, channel or whatever you want to call it, I think of ESPN, you know. When you think of sports, if you want to watch a football game or get good commentary, it's ESPN. So, I mean, I think it's a step up for everybody in the sport.
There's going to be some opportunities for athletes to move over to broadcasting now. I mean, I don't think that, you know, they've determined who's going to be in those spots. I know that Fox had their crew and a lot of them could move over, but is that something that interests you, being in that space?
You know, I have actually been in the commentary seat a few times, and I literally enjoyed it. I loved it. Had a great time doing it. Loved the study up on the opponents and just kind of break down fighters. That's something I do a lot with my dad and my brothers and some of my teammates back home. So, dude, I would love to. I would love to take one of those spots if that was possible. So, heck yeah. Put in a good word for me, man.
I'll do what I can. I mean, we're up at TSN. We are the ESPN affiliate to the north. So, I'll try to pull some strings for you. I'll talk to the right people.
Preach, man. All right. There we go. You the man.
Well, if you're into analyzing fighters and you've been doing that with your dad, let's look at your opponents from the last 3 years in order. So we've got Johnny Hendricks, Rory McDonald, Tyron Woodley twice, Jorge Masvidal, Darren Till. How does Till stack up in terms of the level of difficulty from this resume of over the last 3 years?
You know, I think Darren Till is very durable. He's a very young fighter. Most of the guys that I fought has been, you know, my age other than Rory McDonald. You know, he's very hungry fighter, and he's doing it in his hometown. So, I mean, his striking is very good. He's definitely a big guy, big welterweight, and, you know, he's put some guys away. So you got to watch out for that left hand. That said, I mean, his style is very, it's kind of basic. It's a Muay Thai stylist, but not your average Muay Thai stylist. He does kind of fight with his hands down, throws a mean left hand. He loves to try and pressure you, get you up against the cage, and loves to throw that elbow. That said, I've most of the guys that I've faced in the welterweight division have been aggressive. So he says he's going to put me out in the second round. So that makes me lead, to believe that he's going to be aggressive. And I like that, you know, to be honest with you, I like those guys that come out who, they end up running into things, things that they don't see. So most of my best knockouts have been against really aggressive guys. So I don't mind that much at all.
So where does he stack up? Do you think he's better than Jorge Masvidal or the version of Johnny Hendricks you fought?
You know what? He's definitely up there. I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot of his fights to really gauge, where he's at. You know, he's fought Donald Cerrone, which is the only name that I know that he's fought. You know, I've gone back to look at some of his other fights, but, compared to some of the other guys in the top 10, I'm not really sure, to be honest. I just got to go out there and kind of feel it out and see. The other three guys that he's faced, I didn't even know their name. And I didn't even know who he was when I was first approached by him. You know, I had to do some studying up on him. And the reason for that was, I said no, but I had two broken thumbs, and I kind of wanted to see where the welterweight division was going. There was rumor of an interim title, so I kind of wanted to see what was going on, and obviously I didn't get that. So I want to test myself against, these up-and-comers, the next generation, people are saying, to solidify that number one spot, let everybody know that I deserve to be here and still deserve to stay here. And I got to show that, obviously, this Sunday, May 27th. So Darren Till, he's very tough, very durable. I think he's going to be in the best shape of his life fighting in his hometown. I know I would be, and that's what I'm prepared for.
Somewhere, Wendell De Oliveira is very upset you haven't heard about him, but we'll move forward. Two broken thumbs. You mentioned that. How did it affect your training, and what percentage would you say you're at right now health-wise?
Oh, man, they're 100%. 100%. Of course, you never go into a fight 100%. You know, there's always little ticks, little things that you feel, and knees and toes and, soreness. But, man, I feel great. I feel really good. My thumbs are strong. Still doing physical therapy up until the fight to make sure they stay strong. So, man, I'm ready to rock and roll.
Everybody makes a big deal about Till walking around at about 215 pounds. His nickname, is the gorilla. That's where it stems from. Is that overstated? What do you walk around at? What does Tyron walk around at? Is 215 really that big for a welterweight?
You know, at 215 pounds, I mean, that's a pretty big welterweight. I mean, during camp, he probably works his way down, but, he's probably used to that. He probably used to walk around at 215. Tyron Woodley walks around 205, 210, I believe, as the heaviest he's gotten. So, and most of my sparring partners are 185ers. I mean, they walk around at 225, 230. So, I'm used to those big guys.
We talk about, you being a nice guy, classically a nice guy. You know, you, like I said, you're pound for pound probably the nicest guy in MMA. But one thing I want you to do is go back and watch videos of Colby Covington from 2015, 2016. Watch the interviews. He's a very respectful guy. Suddenly, he has kind of this heel turn moment where he decides he has to start ripping people left and right, and he's really committed to it. He was kind of used to be kind of Wonder Boy in his approach to interviews, and now he's really kind of he's flipped the script a little bit. But it's worked out for him. He's getting an interim title shot. What are your thoughts on Colby and what he's become, so to speak, the monster that's become Colby Covington?
You know, hats off to the guy. To be honest, he's definitely talked his way into interim title. He's fought, he beat Damian Maia. He's fought some really tough guys and ended up with a win. Is he an exciting fighter? I don't think so, but he did kind of flip the script and to be honest, man, it's kind of annoying to these guys that are coming in and doing the talk. You have those original guys, and you know who they are, obviously. But then you get these guys who try and come in and do the same thing, and it almost comes off as fake or annoying. And that's what I kind of take from it. But, hey, it's working for him.
He's also spoiling movies for everybody. Spoiling, the Avengers movie.
No.
That's a good heel move. I like that. spoiling Star Wars. He's really committed to it.
Yeah, no, that's horrible. No wonder. You know what I mean? He's truly becoming the bad guy.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for your time, Stephen. We're really looking forward to the event. And if you are listening, Sunday morning, It begins at 10 a.m. Eastern time, and the main card you can catch on TSN. And you know, next year, 2019, you'll be able to catch these cards on ESPN, which is a pretty big deal. I appreciate your time, Stephen, and best of luck this weekend.
Thanks a lot, brother. Have a good one.
That was Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Very interesting perspective from him. I like what he had to say about ESPN, about how big it is for the sport. He thinks that ESPN is just a big step up, and we talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. I'm not convinced that he says, you know, people always have injuries going into fights, but I don't know. He had two broken thumbs.
Against Masvidal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and he didn't really, like, it seemed like he was a little bit hesitant to take this fight, but you've released a video in the past that's on YouTube on how to beat Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. So you've got Till, he's a big southpaw, he hits hard. You know, he's not necessarily a knockout artist. He did knock out Cerrone and looked very good in that fight. How can Darren Till have success against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson? Because if you look at the stats, they're actually pretty similar.
Yeah, I think the key for Darren Till is that he is a southpaw also. When you have that north-south education that we talked about earlier, what happens is it creates more distance between you and your opponent. So when you're in southpaw and orthodox, you're further away. You're opened up. It's far. So, but if you match the southpaw, the leg's a little bit closer, the outside of the leg. Because hitting inside on a north-south, you break your foot very easily. Not a great strike to do. So going southpaw, I think, is the key for Darren Till. And that's how he's able to close distance a little quicker. When you fight someone like Wonderboy Thompson, he's a traditional martial artist. He has that karate background. So what happens, karate is based on counterfighting, creating space, catching people when they come in. So he has that style where Darren Till matches that. So he's going to keep the distance closer and he's going to have to pressure. So you're going to see Till have to close that distance. So it's going to be more about pressure, maybe take a shot to get in or really stay defensive. If you open up from a far distance with Wonderboy Thompson, he's going to catch you. Okay. So, I mean, if I open up far away, he sees it right away. It's so quick. It's so easy. So you have to close distance with your defense first. Stay tight, move your head, get close, and then strike. Don't strike from far out. People try to close the distance with striking. No, you got to close the distance with your footwork. Then when you're on the inside, really look on attack. And if I'm Darren Till and I'm fighting Wonderboy Thompson, going southpaw is key because the way Wonderboy stands, he has something called the bladed stance, which means his toes he's almost in a sideways position. So his front foot, his heel is really out. As a southpaw now, that makes it really hard for Stephen Wonderboy Thompson to block the low kick. So if I'm fighting Wonderboy Thompson and I'm a southpaw, I'm attacking that lead leg, trying to stay away from the hands, attack the lead leg. He's going to throw his side kicks, but by jamming the distance with your defense, it's just going to open up. So I think the key is close the distance. As a southpaw, Darren Till's got to attack that lead leg.
Interesting. Well, I mean,
with the bladed stance, I think it makes it a lot easier.
Some interesting facts about these two fighters. Stephen Thompson's never lost to a younger opponent in his career, at least his MMA career, which is, I think, significant. They have the same amount of fights. So experience is, you know, even though Thompson's 10 years older, they've had the same amount of MMA fights. Of course, Thompson's fought the higher level of a fighter, of competition. And apparently, Hill is undefeated in his Muay Thai career. He's 44-0, according to what I've read.
Yeah.
And Thompson's undefeated in kickboxing, 75-0.
I always roll my eyes on those.
Why? Because you just don't know who they're fighting?
Yeah, who are they fighting? Are they little amateur karate kickboxing tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, Hill would have been like 21 or something
at
the oldest.
When he was 75-0, I was in the kickboxing rankings. How come you never met me? You know, why was I ranked number one in North America? Why did I get, you would have been called by Glory. You would have been on the, I was ranked in Canada once I first started in Canada right away. Then I was ranked number one in North America. So, I mean, I never heard of the name. I never saw the name. It's never come up to me. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and he also was doing point karate, like, yeah, a lot of point
maybe
karate.
Maybe they used a lot of that record, but yeah. It's a different beast, man. I don't know. I question these undefeated, huge kickboxing
there,
records.
There aren't really a lot of good websites that have full kickboxing records, I've noticed.
Yeah, no one really. None.
There's not
Liver
really
Kick
a database.
Is probably
yeah.
the main based one, is
yeah.
liverkick.com.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
yeah,
there's
not really
much.
A big database. And yeah. Speaking of Glory, a lot of Glory heavyweights trying out for this new Ultimate Fighter season. Are you aware?
No, I don't know.
So we've got Anderson Silva.
Yeah,
Silva.
He's been training. He won a good knockout in Brazil. He had a nice knockout.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but
there
that's cool.
There were a
cool.
couple other names. I'm going to pull them up, actually. Yeah, you can tell me a little bit about them.
I know our current middleweight champion's fighting on the Contender Series. We looked at that,
yeah.
Alex Pereira. But he's actually fighting July 20 in New York. Which makes
yeah,
things
I saw
interesting.
That, which is weird.
Yeah, he's
it's
defending his
time.
Title against Yusri Belgarwi, July 20th in New York.
Who do you
York.
Like in that fight?
It's good. I mean, they fought before. Pereira won. He kneed Belgari in the head, split his eye open. But Belgari, if that cut never happened, the edge might have gone to Belgari. So it's still going to be a really, really close fight. I don't know. It's up in the air for me,
so
man.
So Pereira gets knocked out badly. He's probably not going to fight on Contender Series, I'd have to imagine.
Which is the Contender Series August 10th, right? It would almost be two.
Yeah, that would be like 2 months. That's what maybe.
No, it would be 1 month, right? If it's August 10th.
Right,
not even
July,
less.
You said, yeah.
It's a couple weeks.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think of who it was. I'm trying to find...
I saw...
Oh, Demario Dennis.
Demario Dennis, yeah.
And Maurice Green.
Okay.
Are also trying out.
Nice, yeah.
So what can you tell me about those guys?
Maurice Green's pretty good, tall guy, fought some big names. Last fight got knocked out by a big Romanian heavyweight that we have, but very talented, very long. He could do well. I don't know how his ground game is, but striking-wise, he's long, he's confident. I like it. Demario Dennis is more of a tough-style guy. He fought light heavyweight with Glory last. His brother, Myron. Demario got knocked out by Guto Inocente, who fought in the UFC, too, with a spinning heel kick.
Nice.
If you watch every Glory high kick, you'll see that spin kick from Guto. Guto actually fought two times in the UFC. But, yeah, he's tough, aggressive, more of a kickboxing base, but I like it. I like that guys are trying.
Another Glory alum, Ben Edwards, who beat Jamal Ben-Sadiq in Glory.
Yeah, he's coming in, too.
Yeah, he's trying out also.
Oh, all right. I haven't heard of Ben Edwards in a long time.
He must have been
from
working
England.
On his, from Australia, I think.
Is it Australia? Yes, you're right. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
Oceania. He was the Oceania K-1 champion.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that
so
at all.
So all these guys are trying out. You're seeing more and more.
Yeah, we'll see.
Of these fighters.
Yeah, Adesanya's starting well.
The heavyweight makes the most sense, though. Like, if you were going to go make the transition from kickboxing to MMA, heavyweight is probably the best place to be because the takedowns aren't as prevalent.
Yeah, even when we saw... Hezdi Gurgis, who just fought Badr Hari, he was training with Royce Gracie because he's doing maybe, I think he might even try to get some work with Bellator MMA, I think.
Wow.
Who knows? There's a lot of guys wanting to transition. We even had Rico Verhoeven fight, our heavyweight champ, fight an MMA fight. Robin Van Roosmalen has fought MMA fights. So guys are trying to dabble their way in.
Yeah, and these are like big-time champions. Like,
yeah.
Names, like Pereira.
Yeah, big names, yeah. Big names. So we'll see. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Kind of sucks because we want the kickboxers to stay pure to kickboxing, right?
Yeah.
We don't want them to go and lose them and then they lose their name, their value in the UFC, but career-wise, it makes sense for them. For me now, from a Glory sitting on like the staff and the business side of Glory, it would be nice for them to stay. I'd rather see MMA guys try to make their way into kickboxing.
If you were 10 years younger, do you think you would have tried out MMA?
Absolutely. My whole thing was I had a few MMA fights booked. I did jiu-jitsu before it wasn't even popular. I was doing jiu-jitsu. But I broke my arm playing soccer, and I loved stand-up. But I'm telling you right now, like in my mind, like, you know, GSP was kind of lucky that, you know, I didn't do it because I felt I would have been better, a lot better than GSP with my mindset, with my training. And I think, you know, with my ability to strike better than he could, I felt, his wrestling's obviously a lot better, but I felt like me and GSP would have been that level of MMA guy if I had the right marketing behind me.
Interesting.
It's just we never had the popularity in the sport.
I mean, I guess 10 years ago it was fairly popular. That was when Mark Hominick was doing well and those guys, but I mean it wasn't really the level that it is now where it's like on big TV and you know.
Yeah. But I mean for me it's like I it's just kickboxing was my love. But I think I would have done if I would have trained the way I did full time into MMA, man, I would have easily been the welterweight champ. Easily in my mind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I never know, Joe. I never know what to say.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking, like, I'm visualizing you in there with GSP, and I'm like, I just don't know how to do it.
Because
my brain goes into overload.
Striking versus wrestling.
Like,
yeah,
my brain just goes into, like, I love visualizing fights and how they're going to play out.
Yeah.
But then you take you, and I've never seen you compete in MMA.
Yeah.
And I just can't, like, I can't visualize what would happen in the grappling exchange or if you're on your back.
No, but obviously I would have been trained
of course.
Since I was 15
but,
years
course,
old.
Of course, but in my brain,
it, right?
I can't, like, I can't process
see
it.
Yeah,
it.
Because you've
just,
only
like,
seen me
that's
in a
why
ring.
I'm giving you one-word answers because I'm trying to, like, in my head.
Huh, yeah. No,
think of how it would go.
I think that would have been awesome. I think me and GSP, I would have been that level.
You probably wouldn't be here co-hosting the show with me, so I am thankful that you
would. Why not?
I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah,
maybe he'd still be the champion. Yeah. And still going. Who knows?
I still look at like my whole career was everyone was talking about me and GSP all the time. Not at fighting, but like the same kind of person to build the sport in Canada. Like it was very parallel. And that's every interview I did, everyone asked me, like, hey, do you see yourself? GSP's retiring. Do you see yourself? And I said, yeah, absolutely. Like I feel like I can be a great ambassador for combat sports, and we have the same kind of mindset of martial arts. We've both trained traditional classic martial arts when we were young. We were very similar, and listening to Rogan, we're almost the same person, man. We're very like, we live our lives very similar, you know. It's kind of scary to hear sometimes. I think we're the exact same. Even fighters who've trained with George are like, man, you guys are the same person.
That was the first thing I said to you when you got here. I was like, I was listening to the George interview, and I saw
he's
so many
studying
parallels.
Like, he's like, oh, yeah. I've been watching all these videos on intermittent fasting. In my head I was like, buddy, I watch every intermittent fasting video, I've read textbooks, I've done everything on intermittent fasting and keto dieting. So very similar approach to our martial arts and athleticism. So I mean, it's great.
Like he works with like the best doctors and he goes to the university and they test him. It's like you just never hear of other mixed martial artists doing that. Yeah. I don't know if they do, and they're just not as big as GSP and you don't know about it, but it was crazy to listen to. Yeah. Darren Till is also in the main event of UFC Liverpool in his backyard. I think that building is going to absolutely erupt when he fights, and if he can get the win, like it could be the craziest atmosphere that we've ever seen in MMA, outside of maybe Conor in Ireland. But he'll be fighting this weekend. It's on TSN 4, 1 p.m. Eastern. The main card starts. You're going to want to check out that main event. It's going to be awesome. And Darren Till joins the show right now.
I'm now joined by Darren Till, who will be headlining this Sunday's card in Liverpool, his backyard, his hometown. Darren, has the vibe in Liverpool changed for you at all this week? Is something different in the air?
Just a little bit more excitement, a little bit more passion. You know, obviously, it's never been to Liverpool before. It got me fighting in the main event, so there's a little bit more excitement. It's good. It's good. Good vibes.
Absolutely. Do you feel like the UFC is kind of betting on you here? You know, we saw a ton of video content around you that's been posted. The hour-long, in-depth video that John Gooden put together. This is in Liverpool. Do you feel pressure in that regard, or is it more of a vote of confidence?
I think the UFC see me as a team player. I'm willing to do what they ask. You know, and I haven't turned any fights down. I'm willing to fight anyone. And, you know, I stepped up to fight on 9 days' notice in my debut. So the UFC see me as a team player, and when you're a team player, you get rewarded. If you're not a team player and you don't do your requirements or obligations, well, unfortunately, you don't get rewarded.
You know, it's funny. I watched the in-depth video, and you were talking about how you just don't care. If they called you and said, you know, we want you to fight Francis Ngannou on short notice, you don't care. You're willing to do it. Even though you might think you might lose that fight or get smashed, you just don't care. Is that attitude something that you think is going to just take you very far in the sport?
It might not. I might get knocked out a couple of times, but I just simply do not care because I don't fear no man. I don't fear no man, whether he be a grappler, whether he be a submission specialist, whether he be a knockout artist, a striking phenomenon. I do not fear no man, and I just couldn't care less. So if they ask, I am there to provide my services.
You know, I will correct you, because as I said, I just did watch the in-depth video. You do fear one man, your master, Colin, correct?
Yeah, I fear Colin with my life. I fear that man, and I will fear him until the day I die or until the day he dies. Hopefully that never comes, but I fear that man a lot.
How did that relationship come to be like that, where, you know, he's the one guy that can kind of crack that veneer of I guess, not caring and not fearing anybody?
Just because he's, to me, he's not a man. He's a supernatural being. You know, to me, he's all wise and all knowledgeable. And I just look up to him with my life. So it's interesting, but he's the only man I do fear, and I fear him a lot.
Another thing that stood out to me is that you think that a lot of your success is driven by the fact that you have no plan B. This is your life. This is what you want to do. That is, I guess, the biggest motivator for you, is that there's really nothing else in your life that matters. There's no other goal that you're looking at.
No, I do not care about anything else. I don't care about pursuing a career in anything else. If I did care about doing that, I think I would have a big fall in MMA for me, there's no plan B. It's only a plan A, and I know 100% that plan A will work. And if plan A doesn't work, I'll be shattered.
You've even gone as far as deleting your social media apps. You've been staying off of social media. Do you think of that as a distraction from greatness? Do you have any distractions in your life? What do you do during your downtime?
I just like to chill and watch stupid stuff on television. I'm not really a guy who... I don't really have a lot of hobbies or anything. I just like training really, really hard. And that's it, really. So for me, yeah, it's staying off social media because, you know what I mean, it's always someone showing off a car or it's a girl showing off a beauty product, and I haven't got no time for stuff like that. So for me, I'd rather be, you know, just sitting at home with my girlfriend watching telly.
You don't need people to know what, you know, about the cool things in your life. I mean, that's for you. And I guess that's kind of your mentality when it comes to social media, that you think a lot of people, are trying to be something that they're not, or at least portray something that they're not.
A lot of people on social media have got an opinion. Most of the time, they've got a negative opinion and they're always looking to shut down someone or hate on someone. And the other time, people are, you know, posting pictures of cars or whatever they've got, and sometimes them types of people haven't even worked for that stuff. If I post a picture of me wearing a watch, you know that I worked at my ass off for that watch the honest way, with hard work and fighting another man to be able to buy that watch. So for me, someone wanted me to start a fragrance brand the other day, you know, with my name on, that's just not me.
So I guess Tillwater won't be in stores anytime soon?
No. You know, I've already got, you know, that guy works for me. He does some T-shirts and caps, and I think that's nice for guys who want to show their support for him. That's good, but there's got to be a line where it stops. You know, it can't all be trying to make off, you know, people who don't have enough money trying to sell it. You know, you gotta stay true.
I did want to get your take on something surrounding the business of mixed martial arts. Today, the UFC announced that they have a deal with ESPN going forward, starting in 2019. ESPN will be the new home of the UFC. I'm not sure how big the name ESPN resonates on the other side of the pond, but have you heard that news, and what's your reaction to it?
That is really, really good news. I didn't know, but I haven't fought in America yet, so for me, at this present moment in time, it doesn't really make much difference. I'm bringing the market to England and to Europe. So for me, great news for the UFC. As I said, I'm a UFC team player, but right now, it doesn't really mean a lot.
Well, you've only fought on television once, which is the crazy thing about your meteoric rise. You've fought on Fight Pass every other time. It seems like there must be something about you that really resonates with this audience.
People like guys like me, because I don't give a f***. And I'll fight anyone. So a lot of people can find inspiration from that. And obviously people along the way want to see me get beat and get knocked out. And that's fine. I'm sure at some point they'll be able to bask in that happening. Maybe it might happen. But I say what's on my mind. I say what I believe. And I like fighting. You know what I mean? That's why the rise has been the way it has been. I mean, can you imagine if I was on American telly all them times? You know, I'm going to get to America soon.
I spoke to Stephen Thompson about an hour ago. He says he thinks your striking's basic, but he loves the fact that you're a pressure fighter because he thinks that that's a good stylistic matchup for him. What about Stephen, in your eyes, makes him a good stylistic matchup for you?
I'm just cleverer. I'm just better. It's basic. My striking is very, very basic, but it's very, very, very efficient and effective. So I don't come out there doing all spinny kicks and that, and no disrespect, but I come out there to do business, bread and butter. That's what my style is, bread and butter. But it's very, very intelligent and precise and accurate bread and butter. So, you know, Stephen's going to get a shock Sunday. I'm not what he thinks I am. He thinks I'm just this aggressive pressure fighter. Going to get a shock.
I guess, you know, I don't think he's very threatened by your jiu-jitsu, but we've seen some clips of you kind of working on that. Is that an element to your game you're hoping to show him, or are you more than happy to just stand and trade with him?
Oh, I want to stand and say it, of course, but whatever happens, happens. If he wants to take it to the ground, I will try to submit him. I'll get back to my feet. And if I'm on top of him, you know, I'll try and ground and pound the life out of him. But, you know, we'll just see what happens. I believe it's going to be a striking match, but I don't doubt that he's going to try and go for a takedown as well. He says my striking's basic, but I can see a takedown coming.
Thompson took this fight with two broken thumbs. We don't really know, you know, if he was pressured into taking this fight, because I know that this was a fight a lot of people really wanted to see. Have you been training for what you think will likely be a kicking-heavy plan of attack because of, I guess, the limitations in his training due to the broken thumbs?
No, not really. I've just been training hard. We've been changing a few things up, but no big changes. If it's not broke, don't fix it. And nothing's ever been broke. I'm still unbeaten, so... You know, we've just been working really, really hard. We've had a few new sparring partners, and that's it.
If you get a win, you'll have beaten the number one contender in the welterweight division. We have an interim title fight coming up in June that's probably going to determine the next title contender, but I'm guessing you don't want to sit around and wait for that title shot. You're just going to take whoever the UFC throws at you. Is that kind of the game plan going forward?
Yeah, let's just see what the UFC want to do. If they want to give me someone after Stephen when I beat Stephen, then, yeah, I'll take the fight, you know, but... If they say, we want you to fight for the title, then I'll take that as well. For me, at this moment, I don't really care, to be honest with you.
And finally, Mike Perry. You guys had a bit of a beef in Poland. It was great for promotion for a future fight, but I guess Perry didn't really live up to his end of the bargain. He's lost a few in a row since. But it seems the two of you are chatting now, and he's showing you a lot of support. How did this unlikely friendship come about?
Just because, as crazy as Mike is, he's not fake, and he's not going to talk unnecessary shit, and he likes the way I am as well, because I am the same. We were just building the fight up, but I don't hate the man, and he doesn't hate me either. And this is the difference between me and all these other fighters. When you lose, I'm not gonna make your loss 10 times worse by talking shit. So when he did have them two losses, I didn't talk no shit on Ariel Helwani's show. I gave him respect and tried to, you know, say some pointers what I thought he needed to work on in his game, and he respected that. A lot of other fighters would just hate on a guy. Like this weekend, if Stephen comes out and knocks me out, you just wait for how many fighters are going to talk shit about me and say, I knew it was a hype train, he's only a kid, this, that, the other. You're going to jump on it. So that's why it ain't going to happen, is it?
And that's going to take place this Sunday. We will be having it on TSN up here in Canada. We do look forward to watching you on television in the main event, 5 rounds in Liverpool. The building is going to be, I would imagine, outrageously loud supporting you. I'm not sure if they're going to boo Stephen. I think they know Stephen's a nice guy and they'll respect him, but I think that they're going to cheer you like you're a deity in that building.
Yeah, I hope they don't boo Stephen. It's not nice to get booed. I've been booed myself. I hope they don't boo him, but obviously I'm the home fighter. The crowd's with me, but as long as he's coming out and they give him a clap of hands, that's enough for me. It's not, you know, he's talking like he's the bad guy. He's not no bad guy, Stephen. So as long as he gets a clap of hands, I'm happy. And obviously the respect after the fight will be shown. So for me, it's all about respect. And I like respecting my opponent as much as I like hating him.
All right, Darren, well, we appreciate your time. It's always great seeing your rise to superstardom continue, and we'll see if that continues on Sunday after the fight with Stephen Thompson. It's going to be a fun one.
Thanks, mate. See you later.
That was Darren Till. Man, a lot of beeps in that interview. The guy likes to swear.
Yeah, that's all right.
He's good at fighting and good at swearing.
It's part of the culture there, I feel.
Yeah, I think so. I think for sure.
It's got to be.
With the amount that he was doing, it's got to be how he just probably speaks to people regularly. But I like the real Darren Till.
Yeah, for sure. Keep it real.
Yeah.
You know, get real as you get.
Some other fights to look at on that card. Jason Knight versus Makwan Amirkhani, I think, will be a fantastic fight. Both of those guys are big-time up-and-comers in the sport. Daniel Kelly against Tom Breeze. Daniel Kelly's a guy you just can never write off. He's an older guy, but
yeah, he's tough.
He's just tough as nails, absolutely. Neil Magny, Craig White. Craig White taking the co-main event slot on very, very short notice against Magny.
Yeah, Magny's tricky. Like, I mean, the fights you expect him to win, he never necessarily wins.
Yeah,
when you expect him to lose, he wins.
Yeah,
so,
he's
like,
conned it easily. Yeah,
it's very tricky to call his fights.
I think he'll win this one, no problem. Arnold Allen, TriStar product, young guy from the UK, making his return in the UFC against Mads Burnell. I like Manny Bermudez versus Davy Grant. Davy Grant was the runner-up on The Ultimate Fighter, but really hasn't fought a whole lot. So those are really the fights that stand out. And of course, our pal Elias Theodorou fighting Trevor Smith on the Fight Pass card. And he's the biggest, second biggest favorite to Neil Magny on the card, as you pointed out.
Another Canadian you saw, Taleb, yeah. Nordine Taleb.
Well, Nordine is like, he's from France, but he's basically a Canadian.
Yeah, I see him only
at TriStar. He's got a Canadian flag with him, yeah. He's always a TriStar.
I think he reps. Yeah. Does he even go to France ever? Do you know?
No, I think he's always a TriStar. For the most part, maybe he goes back and visits every now and then. So we're gonna do our picks. Nothing really stands out to me huge on this card, but just from a value standpoint, I like Claudio Henrique da Silva, who's taking on Nordine Taleb. Da Silva is just—he's got a really good record. He's beaten a lot of good competition, and it's just to me the line at 3-1 is a little bit high here. I think Taleb has been a destroyer lately. He's looked really good. But this is a guy that has not lost in many, many years. I think since like 08. It's almost 10 years since De Silva's
lost.
He's
a plus 300, so if you get that, you're, you know.
Yeah, I'll be doing all right. We both lost last week, by the way. I had Jared Cannonier. You had Chad Laprise. It happens.
I thought Laprise's movement would have, gone away from that punching power. But
Luque's a fantastic fighter. He's really
I'm hoping Laprise comes and trains a little bit more often with me. So, Chad, if you're listening, buddy, let's get working.
Get it in. All right. Who's your pick?
I don't know much about this card and based on the odds, but I trust my other colleagues in the sport, and a lot of people are talking about the Amir Khani fight. So he's a plus 130 over Jason Knight, so I'm going to go with Amir Khani.
All right, two underdog picks for us this week. And we'll be back next week. So we've got the UFC in Utica next Friday. You're not going to be here next week, though. You're calling Glory. So where are you heading?
I'm off to Birmingham, England. So
you're going to be next door to Liverpool.
I will. I'm leaving on Monday. So we have our big show. I can give it a little plug. Rico Verhoeven, our heavyweight champ, against Mladen Brestovac from Croatia. Good fight, because Mladen Brestovac he's kind of like your Krokop for kickboxing. He's known for his left high kick.
Right?
Trains with Krokop. Not as much, but they did in the past. So that's exciting. The welterweight title on the line, Haru Kugorian. He's fighting a tricky fighter in a Alim Nabiev, and a lot of good Irish talent. So we had some Irish talent, some English fighters coming in. So, yeah, the UK is might be a good hotspot for us.
Well, speaking of the UK being a hotspot, this week you've got Liverpool versus Everton, which is one of the craziest soccer matches from what I understand. I don't follow the sport that closely. Bellator 200 is
going to be there,
in London. You've got this card, the Liverpool card, and then a couple days later you've got Glory in Birmingham. Yeah. So it's a lot going on in that area. If you're from that area,
you've got
a lot of choices.
Yeah, and I mean, they're just building up. I think they're always fight fans, but now they're just showing some big dominance with it, especially with Bellator there doing their 200th show. Sucks that Krokop is out. But
not as much as it sucks that the event's on tape delay in North America.
Yeah.
Come on.
For your 200th show, it needed to be in probably Cali.
No, it's not even that. Just air it. Put it on your app. Put it on Paramount during the day.
But it's 200. It's a milestone. Yeah, you know, you want to promote your 200th show well.
Sure, but
and they're not doing that at all.
Putting it on tape delay is the opposite of what you want to do.
Yeah. That's what they do with their kickboxing too, which is
they do it like 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you're like, we all know what happened.
Yeah, we know what
nobody wants to watch it.
And everybody's going to know what happened for Bellator 200. Nobody's going to want to stay off Twitter.
Yeah, especially without Krokop not on it now. Krokop would have been the big sell.
Yeah, we'll stay off Twitter. Maybe I'll watch that fresh. Who knows?
That's going to be tough. But
it will be tough. But the problem is I'm so like accustomed to just grab my phone and go on Twitter. Like, you know, it's just
it's
hard for me to
that's the first thing
remember.
You open up?
Well, my email, and then I'll pull up Twitter, see what I'm missing in the world. Twitter I think of Twitter as like almost a real-time newspaper.
Yeah, it's
just
quick.
Getting caught up on what's going on in the world all the time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of dangerous. Like I've been weaning myself off of it a little bit lately.
Sometimes I try to do it too. Sometimes even with me, like when I have to prepare for this Glory show, half the time I'll look and then I'll check my phone quickly. But now like I try to keep my phone in a total different room. I say, okay, 1 hour, I'm not looking at my phone so I can focus and bang out all my work.
And as Darren Till mentioned in the interview, he's deleted all the social media apps off his phone. He says it's just a distraction.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to be, I only want to focus on being a champion. There's too much negativity on Instagram and
And it's easy to get caught up in it, to read comments of stupid trolls, you know, talking bad, and they have nothing to, they don't know anything about you, and they're threatening you, and I don't know.
Is there a more disrespected, like, occupation than being a mixed martial artist? Like, think of the amount of work that these people put in. And people are like, oh, you're garbage. Your takedown defense is trash. It's like, come on, man.
From people who've never trained in their life, too. Like, oh, I can beat that. I'm guilty sometimes of that. Like, I'll watch a soccer game, like an MLS soccer game. I'm like, I could play on this team. And then once you get a little closer.
But you don't tweet at the player.
No. But I look at it, I was like, oh, okay. But that's just me being confident.
Yeah, you're not sending the guy a tweet saying, hey,
you're garbage.
How'd you miss that free kick? You're
I stopped even looking at comments most of the time. Like, I mean, on Instagram, it's a little different, but on YouTube and my channel. And
you definitely want to avoid.
I know, because, I mean, it's technical. I mean, I can explain how to throw a right cross, for example, but you might teach it differently. Everyone teaches it differently, but it's so easy for someone to criticize something. So, I mean, I don't even read it.
All right. Well, speaking of which, you can go on Joe's YouTube channel. He's not going to look at your comments, but you can.
I browse them. Don't worry. I kind of bruise and browse.
What's the weirdest thing someone's written to you? Has anybody ever commented on your looks or anything strange like that?
No. So people used to they thought I looked like Amanda Nunez. They think they're like we're like the same person. That's the weirdest one I got on YouTube.
Is someone just one person kept being like?
No, there's a couple people, and people are like, "Yeah, apparently we have a similar look, and maybe our skin color, or jaw structure, or facials. I don't know what people say.
I can see it a little bit, not really, but I mean,
I don't know. I don't know if it's calling her a male, me a female, or maybe we're in between.
That's not necessarily true. There are lots of males and females that look alike. They just have similar facial expressions.
I don't have facial hair, so maybe that. I don't know. Who knows? But that's probably the weirdest one I've got.
Yeah. All right, that is kind of strange. That's a little bit weird. I'll tell you a good story off air, but that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week to talk about what happened in Liverpool, talk a little bit about this Utica card. Joe won't be here, but we'll figure out a way to get this information to you. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.